Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You're listening to The Western Rookie, a hunting podcast full of tips, tricks, and strategies from seasoned Western hunters. There are plenty of opportunities out there. We just need to learn how to take on the challenges.
Hunting is completely different up there.
I harvested 26 big game animals.
You can fool their eyes, but you can't fool their nose.
300 yards back to the road turned into 3 miles back the other way.
It's always cool seeing new hunters go and harvest an animal.
I don't know what to expect.
If there's anybody I want in the woods with me, it'll be you.
Welcome back to the Western Rookie Podcast, brought to you by Go Hunt. Like always, I'm your host, Brian Krebs. In today's episode, we actually originally recorded it for our other show, the Two Bucks Podcast, the Outdoor Entrepreneurship Show. But the guest today is a great guest for Western hunting. The topics we talked about, we covered a bunch of things, and they're all very relevant to Western hunting. So I thought I wanted to share this episode with the Western Rookie crowd as well, because it's a great episode and I'm really excited for it. So thanks for being here. Let's kick this episode. This week we've got, I almost want to call you a good buddy, Steve, because we've been talking for the last couple months about doing this and about hunting and all kinds of things, but we've never done a podcast before. So we got you on for the first time. We're going to be talking Muley Maniacs. We're going to be talking Kennedy tripods. We're going to be probably diverge into a couple hunting stories. But I'm really excited to finally find a time that works to get you on a podcast.
Yeah, I'm glad that we're finally able to make it work. It's been since August that we were talking about doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and I've been following you, the Muley Maniacs page, for a long time, relatively newer to the tripods. I know Dan Matthews had you on a podcast and he was like, dude, you got to have this guy Stieg on your podcast. He's got like the best tripods that you can find in the West. And I was like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. And that was a couple years ago. And I think I honestly just got too busy and we didn't get it lined up. And so I've been a big follower of what you guys have been doing for a long time. So I'm really excited to have you on the pod.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So which one came first? Was Muley Maniacs the first, like the first endeavor that you did, or was it the tripod company?
So Muley Maniacs was first. So I started Muley Maniacs just on Instagram right out of high school and just decided to grow a page, wanted to do something with it, but I had no idea what I wanted to do. And it wasn't until, man, when would that have been? That would have been like 5 years later that I decided tripods is what we wanted to do and started looking for tripods and found a place to manufacture the tripods that we wanted to do and went for it.
So let's start with first the Muley Maniacs, because it's like, I feel like it has evolved into such a large brand, like a presence, probably much more than like, hey, I just love mule deer and I want a place to post mule deer photos and videos and digiscoping, you know, stuff. That might've been how it started out, but now it's just like huge. It's massive. Like how did that like transform, like walk us through kind of starting it and then when it really started to take off and like what it's been like since then.
So really the start of it was just, it was actually me and a buddy and we just wanted to post stuff, you know, see what happened. You know, we followed Tines Up and Hushin and all those guys and thought, yeah, we find some cool sheds, we kill some cool stuff, we want to post some videos and just see what people think. And it took quite a while to really take off, just like anything. Actually, what really got us going was, wasn't until we started the tripods already that we had a video of a bull that a buddy of mine had the tag, and we'd gone out and found this good bull, like a 330, 340 type bull, and I ended up getting really, really good video of him shooting this bull, and for some reason, overnight, that video went to 2 million views on Instagram.
Wow.
And just took off, and after that, it's been steady. I think we've got, I don't remember, there's several videos now that have gone over a million views and hundreds of thousands of likes, and it's been a lot of fun.
That is fun. Do you view the like the page as like a business, the social media for Muley Maniacs, like a legit business, or is it still just a place for you to post like the fun stuff that you want to put up?
I don't really know how I kind of look at it. It's just there. It's kind of like Kennedy Tripods is the real business, and Muley Maniacs is more of an influencer for it.
Right. Because like, for example, if you had a personal brand with the follower base that you've got, like you would
you would be like getting hit up by management companies. You know, you could have like sponsorship deals, posts, you know, all kind of, like it could be like, I feel like there's a lot of people that are full-time influencers with like a same amount of followers that you've built just posting the stuff you love to post.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem with me, why I can't do something like that is it probably shows, I hate being the face of stuff. I hate being on a video. I don't like, you know, like it's rough for me to go and make a video telling people about my tripods and how they work and stuff like that, just because it's not me. I'm just a regular guy that loves to go hunting. And so it's really hard for me to be that face.
So that brings up a really interesting question then on the tripod. So you said you were kind of thinking about what you wanted to do and you started a tripod company. First of all, tripods are a product where I'm like, how would you even get started? Like you can't, most people can't build them on their own. Like you don't have the materials, especially if you're doing carbon fiber tripods. Like, yeah, you can maybe cut some tube aluminum and figure out the right sizing and a couple of locks and stuff, and you could probably make a pretty crude tripod. But high-end stuff, componentry, like I would be like, where do you even get started? Like, is that kind of how you felt too? Like, I want to make a tripod because what I've been using is junk and doesn't work, but where do I begin?
Oh, yeah. Well, my big thing with the tripods, the reason I decided to do it is we use tripods all the time. That's 90% of my hunting is sitting behind a pair of binoculars on a hillside with a tripod.
Yeah.
And so I always wanted the high-end, nice tripods growing up, but I could never afford them.
Right.
You know, when you're talking $700, $800 for a set of legs and then that for a head, too, it's like, man, I just don't see how you can afford to do it.
Yeah.
And so the way it really started was I want to do tripods. Let's get into it and see what happens. So after months and months of online searching, I found a factory that was willing to build tripods the way that I had asked. And all I did was went and looked at what other tripods had and then told them, hey, let's try this. And they'd build one and send it to me. And I'd test it out for a little while and go, well, that's not quite what we're looking for. Change this and send me another one. And we went through three or four different models before getting to what we have now.
Yeah. So, and how long has it's Kennedy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes if I see a word and I think it's one way first, I have such a hard time fixing it. But I want to make sure I don't, because it's also like every brand is someone, the person that came up with it, it's their baby, right? Uh-huh. And if I, you know, if you said, hey, here's my baby, his name is Stieg, and I'm like, hi, Stieg. And you're like, oh, nope, that's not right. You know what I mean? So I always want to make sure I get it right. So Kennedy Tripods, how long has that brand been public? Like how long has it been like that? You had the stuff designed, you launched the website. How long ago was that?
That would have been little over 5 years ago.
5 years. That's crazy. And so now is this kind of your full-time endeavor between the Mealy Maniacs and the tripod brand?
It probably could be.
Yeah.
But I can still manage it. And I'm a full-time journeyman plumber, so I can still manage both. So I'm still doing both. But it's growing quickly to the point where it's not going to be manageable doing something else, and I'm going to have to just switch over and run it full time.
Well, that's an exciting step, man. I mean, especially I feel like being able to get a brand to the point where it could be your full time, like it could replace what you're making, but you don't have to, is an awesome place to be, because you have so much more flexibility on what to do with that, right? You could put it all towards growth. You could put half of it towards growth. You could put, you know, all of the proceeds towards some version, retirement, investment, real estate. I mean, there's so many things you can do if you don't have to pay your bills with that. It's also probably a testament to you pick the right company and brand, right? Like, for example, Jeremy Plumber, you can't do any of that without being there running it each of those hours.
Yeah.
And so that you have a ceiling in a way of like, I only have so many hours I can do this for a week. So that's what my you know, its kind of ceiling is versus something where it's like, I can probably scale it up 10-20% for a fraction more hours.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely getting to that point, but we're not quite there yet.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, so my dad actually owns the company that I work for. So it's one of those things where it's like, I'm going to hold on till the very end just to make sure I can help out and get everything squared away with the plumbing before I leave.
That's funny. And just, so then does your dad help work for the tripod company for you then?
Yeah. Yeah. He goes to a lot of the shows with us and stuff like that. And it's funny because I hate being in the face of things, hate being in the pictures and stuff. He's even worse, but if we're out hunting, he'll be in all the pictures. He doesn't care. My wife does all of our photography for us, so she'll be up there snapping pictures of everybody using the tripods. And it's just funny. If you met my entire family, you'd be like, man, these people do not seem like they should be running a business like this. They don't seem like they should be the face of this stuff.
Well, that brings up an interesting topic because I've had a few people on the podcast that have very successful product brands, and they don't enjoy being in the limelight. They don't enjoy being in the spotlight. They don't want to be in the advertisements. That's just their nature. One brand even was like, hey, would you? When I'm planning hunts, I like to know what my odds of drawing the tags are so I can apply accordingly and have a better idea where I'll be hunting this fall. Our group has a goal of elk hunting every year, and to do that means we've got to keep an eye on point creep and draw odds so we know which states we should apply for so we have an elk tag in our pocket come fall. Our favorite way to see what the current draw odds for a unit are and how fast point creep is moving is by using the draw odds tool in the Go Hunt Insider service. We can look back at any unit over multiple years to get an idea of how fast point creep is going and where last year's draw odds were, get an idea of where we'll be standing for this year's application. I also use the draw odds tool for my short, mid, and long-term point strategies you've heard me talk about on the podcast. I can plan out my state rotations and know how many years I'll have to build points to draw my mid and long-term trophy unit tags. Draw odds is just one of the tools you'll get when you sign up for the Go Hunt Insider service that I use on every one of my hunts. Head over to GoHunt.com, check out their insider service, and you'll see why it's my single favorite resource for Western hunting. And when you sign up, use the code WESTERN, and they'll give you $50 of free credit in the gear shop towards any gear you need for your next hunt. Go to GoHunt.com, get signed up, and you'll see you have more opportunities than you realize. Mind if I ship you a product? Would you help us out? We're working with this other agency to do some marketing, but we need to, it's a content marketing. And we need to have someone in the actual video. Would you be willing to help us out? And they actually already sent me a product to test out anyway, just for fun. And they're like, hey, test this out. We'd love to do it for with you. Like, let us know what you think. And then I already had one. So when they started marketing, it was like a natural, like, well, we'll ask Brian because he's already got one. So that's easy. I was like, sure, love to help. So we did some videos, sent them back to him. And I'm like, why didn't they do it? And the marketing, and she's like, they just don't want to be in the video. No reason not. Like, because I was like, is it not allowed to be like in your own brand's marketing material from like a marketing standpoint? He's like, well, at a certain point, it helps to have new people in from like a social consumer confidence aspect. But no, they just didn't want to be in the videos. And so I was like, oh, all right. Well, either way, I was happy to help. And it went really well. And so it's not the only time that's happened for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think from a marketing standpoint, it definitely doesn't hurt to have other people, but at the same time, you've got to have a familiar face in it.
Yeah.
Which is what I've mainly been doing as much as I can stand, is trying to be the familiar face to the company. And then we work with numerous people, tons of different people, and their little snippets and stuff that they add to it just adds to that, where people can look at it and go, okay, this isn't just one guy saying that this is a good product. There's multiple people that think it's a good product. And one of my things that I do with the marketing side of it like that is anybody that I would share their stuff or, you know, say, hey, you want an honest review on the tripod? Go talk to this guy. Nobody's paid. We don't pay for influencers, none of that. Everybody that runs our tripods that we share their stuff, it's all just guys that love them that much, just to show this is how good the product really is.
Yeah. How do you, what's your thoughts on a product that, you know, like there's $40 tripods on Amazon that are, you know, legit junk, absolute junk. Like, yeah, they might hold your phone up for a TikTok at home, but absolutely not going to work at all for Western hunting. I got one in my closet, actually. So that's what it's for. It's like for a cell phone. And then there's products all over the place in the middle where you can go to some big box store and get a tripod versus a high quality tripod, like one of the tripods you build. And what's like the thing that you've found that actually helps kind of grow the brand and things that you've seen help get your word out there, get consumers to actually purchase? Because I feel like it could be really hard. It's like, well, I already got a tripod. Or I know there's this other $100 tripod. Like what, you know, I feel like that could be a real challenge to, in order in building a brand where you're like competing against like some bottom of the barrel Chinese knockoffs.
Yeah. Well, it really comes down to the basics with the tripod stuff. It's not that we're better than any other tripod. It's just what we offer you. So we do a lifetime warranty on everything. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that lifetime warranty, it's awesome customer service. You know, I'm running almost the entire thing myself, just me and my wife. So if you call for an issue with something, you're calling me.
Yeah.
So you're not calling to say, hey, we're having this issue with it. What do we have to do to get it taken care of? And this, whoever you're talking to says, well, I don't know. I'll get back to you. I can just take care of it right there.
Yeah.
So you're getting the awesome customer service. You got a lifetime warranty. And then you're getting the top of the line tripod that, yeah, there is others out there that are just as good. But a lot of them aren't marketed strictly towards hunters like we are. We don't mess around with the photography stuff, none of that. We are just a hunting tripod company. And you don't have that relationship with the company that you would get with us.
Yeah, I think there's a lot there that you just said where it's like, you know, some companies like tripod companies are, they're for bird watching.
Yeah.
And you like call customer service, you say, I've got a problem hunting with this tripod. And they're like, hang up on you because they're like, I don't like hunting. Right. Like yeah. That'd be an extreme case. But yeah, so I think there's a lot of power there to being the person that you can actually handle everything. When someone calls in, you're talking to me. You're not talking to an Indian based firm that's handling customer service. Like a lot of brands are. Like a lot of brands have customer service from overseas. And you can tell, like when you call in, you can tell like it's not the same. Right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I get numerous phone calls a year where I'll answer it and people be like, Oh, you're actually a person. And it's like, well, yeah, this is what you're getting working with a smaller company like us that wants to produce a good experience and an awesome product for you at a reasonable price. One of the things I've learned with the big box stores that is really the main reason that we aren't in the big box stores is profit margins on stuff. Yeah. And the margins that your bigger box stores want for products, I am not willing to do. It's not worth it to me. I feel like I'm ripping people off if I did that.
Yeah. Well, you have to basically be able to make money at 25% of your MSRP to be in a big box store.
Yeah.
So if you sell a $100 part, your cost is $25. And that's what you would have to be profitable at. So you'd basically have to like have a $15 cost.
Yeah. So the way it was explained to me is it should be in a little bit more than a thirds. So your product should cost a third of what you're selling it for. You should make a third. The big box store should make a third. And then there should be just a little bit more on top of that.
Yeah, and that's if you go direct. If you go direct to a box store. If you have to go to a distributor to get into the box store, then the distributor, now it's like force. And I think that's where the 25% that I said comes from. Is like you have to basically be able to make it and sell it for 25% because you're going to get 25%. The distributor's going to get 25% or 10%. And the box stores basically want 40%. I mean, that's what they want.
Yeah, yeah, which is honestly ridiculous when you look at it that way. You go in and you're looking at a a $400 tripod sitting on the shelf at one of these big box stores, and you realize that tripod is really maybe $100 is all that that cost to be made, which is why we just don't do it. The only stores that carry our tripods are stores that they don't care about the margins. They want the quality in their stores, which the quality of tripods has gone way downhill in the last 10 years. You know, Manfrotto used to be producing a lot of good tripods and kind of marketing it towards hunters a little bit, but they've kind of fell off the radar. I haven't seen a Manfrotto tripod in a store in a long time.
Yeah. And it's probably also stores where you know the owner. It's not a big box store.
Yeah.
Yep. Per se, it's maybe like, you know, let's just say Bozeman Outdoors. I know that's not a store, but, you know, and you talk to Bob and he's like, dude, I love your tripods. Like, what would be your cost? And you give him a number that, you know, works for you. And you, and you're willing to take a little bit of cut because you're going to sell 15 of them at a time instead of one of them at a time. And you don't have to ship them. You can deliver them in the back of your pickup.
Yep.
And then he's got what, 10, 15, 20%, whatever the number is. So he's happy because he knows people are going to buy them in quality. And like, that's sustainable. And it also helps like Scheels, Cabela's, Bass Pro, they'll survive either way. They've got enough products out there for people that, you know, I go to those stores a lot for my consumable gear, right? If I need new game bags, if I need new ammunition, if I need another set of laces on my boots, if I, whatever I need, consumable stuff, I usually go to a store like that or a rifle. I would prefer to go to a smaller firearms dealer for like stuff like that because they still have exactly what I want. But when it comes to durable gear, tripods, optics, clothing, I usually buy online to either get a better deal for like straight from the company, like their Black Friday savings, or just because like that big box store might not have what I actually want.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's getting to the point and it's, I don't know. It's kind of sad because I used to love going to the big box stores and stuff and seeing everything they had, but it's getting to the point now where you go into them and you're like, man, there's just nothing of quality here. Everything's junk, and you have to go to these little stores to find the quality stuff. And so that's where I do most of my shopping for outdoor stuff is the littler stores. I go in there because they'll actually have something that I want, that I would use.
Yeah, I think you saw that a lot with the Bass Pro Cabela's merger. Like, Cabela's gear used to be like really good gear designed and manufactured high quality. And then when Bass Pro started replacing some of the overlapping SKUs, you could tell, especially for hunting, it's not the same. Yeah. Maybe fishing, you could make an argument, but maybe not still. But the hunting has taken a huge hit in quality.
Yeah. Well, we went into Cabela's not too long ago. My wife and I just, we were on vacation, decided we'd stop it in a Cabela's and see what was going on there. And I need a new set of boots. So we went back to their boot section. They don't carry anything. They don't have anything for boots. They've got a Cabela's brand boot and that's it. And I mean, they're going, where's the Crispies? Where's the Zamberlins? Where's the stuff that I would want to buy? And it's not there.
Yeah. Where's the Kennys? That's my boot brand. I'm a big Kennetrek guy. My brother's a big Schnee's guy. Schnee's was another brand that for a long time was direct to consumer. They didn't do anything big box store. Now I think you can get a couple of them in.
Yeah, yeah. I really like the Zamberlins, but they're so hard to find, not online.
Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah. So there's a couple of different routes, and I usually like big box store retailer. It's probably the last strategy I really hear people going after. And if I was to recommend a strategy for a business, for a product company, I would say make sure you pick a product company and a brand and a product line that you don't need retailers to at least start and launch and start to scale. If you really want to hit like top scales of economy, retailers might be that final step. but you got to be able to do everything else, because you're not going to get into retailers right out of the gate. It's going to be very hard. You're going to have to go very slow, start with small retailers, get a couple of success stories under your belt. We put it in Bob's outdoor store. We put it in Bill's outdoor store. We put it in Bruce's outdoor store, and it all worked. Now we go to, you know, this regional store, like a Runnings or a Tractor Supply. And then you go to the next. Now you're in the national. It's going to take forever. And if you need that to sustain it, you're going to fail first. You're not going to fail. You're going to run out of money. You're going to run out of money before it gets there. So that's where I always recommend, like, try to start with DTC if you can.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And that's what I did for, when did we start getting into stores last year? So that's what I did for 4 years was straight online sales. That's it. Marketing like that. And then it kind of turned into, well, let's get it into a few stores, because it's really difficult to sell a tripod online that nobody can look at, that they can't go in and grab with their hands and pick up and feel and go, wow, that head really is smooth and these legs are sturdy. And so we've started getting into stores this last year, and it's been really good, and it works out really good for us, because I handle the stores just like I do consumer base. You deal directly with me, you want something, just give me a phone call, we'll get it taken care of.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting concept that I just thought about. Like you said, it's a very hard sale for certain things. Now, a lot of people might say, like, for example, Daniel Halverson's on the front page of your website. Some people could be like, I've been following Danielle for 5 years. I see the way she hunts. I know her. I know that she's pretty much a no BS person. So if she's running it, I know I will be happy with it. Some people could go off that, but for the people that really want to touch it, feel it, test it out. And like for me in Minnesota, I would imagine there's not a single retailer in the state of Minnesota that I could get my hands on one.
Right? Yeah.
So I wonder if this would work, and I have not seen anyone try this before. No one loves returning things in the mail. It's a pain in the butt. You got to go to the post office or the UPS store. You got to reach out to customer service. They got to get you a return slip. It's a whole major pain in the butt, right? And now, like, to the point where people are returning so many Amazon things. My wife gets things automatically picked up at our house sometimes to return, which is like, oh, that's awesome. I wonder if this would work. Your marketing message would have to be something like, hey, test it out. Order it. It's going to be there in a week. Touch it, feel it. If you don't like it, there's already a return label in the box. Just slap it on the same box it came with and put it right back out the door. No harm, no foul, right? And you could have some account, some shipping account with UPS or USPS, where they just bill you every month for the return labels. That, you know, like, what's it cost to print a label? I've calculated it's about 25 cents for me. The higher up you go, the cheaper it gets. So you put 25 cents for just, but then a customer knows they don't even have to call anyone if they don't. If you've been listening to the podcast for a little bit, you know that I have been loving my Booner panel blinds by Maverick Hunting. And I'm really excited because the folks over at Maverick just released an all-new Elevate series of platforms. And you can get either a 5-foot or a 10-foot platform to put your Booner or Maverick blind on. I was incredibly fortunate to get a chance to set one of the 10-foot platforms up myself. And I'm telling you what, I will never be building a platform out of wood ever again. The entire process is top-notch. Every piece comes pre-drilled and fitted, so the setup goes perfect and smooth. The only tools you need are a couple of wrenches and a ladder. And even though they recommend having a few friends to help, I was actually able to set it up all by myself using the pallet forks on my tractor. The best part is, if you're trying to get a platform and a stand set up in the back of your property, for my case, in the middle of a swamp, it's super easy to carry all the pieces out there, which is something you can't really do when you build a huge clunky platform out of wood in your backyard, and then you have to go transport it to your hunting property. Head over to maverickhunting.com and see why I love these new platforms so much. And if you're looking to get one for yourself, use the code WESTERNROOKIE and you're going to save 10% on your new platform. Don't like it, they just slap that sticker over the first one and put it right back in the mail. I wonder if that would help get people to pull the trigger, and I wonder how many people would actually return it once they get their hands on it. It's in their house. They're not touching it at a store. It's already in their house.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea, because we do that right now kind of anyways. We do a 30-day guaranteed return no questions asked on it. The only thing that we really ask is keep the boxes. If you're thinking, I might want to return this, just keep the boxes so you can throw it back in the boxes to send it to us.
Yeah, right. Because, like, for optics and stuff like that, usually you have, like, a certain size foam that it keeps it all nice. The packaging is protecting it a little bit. And so that's what I was wondering. It'd be a real fun test to do. I don't know how you would actually test it out. You'd probably have to do a little marketing campaign, maybe, like, some A-B testing. And just print a couple return labels right off the bat and put them right in the box. You know, because, like, for apparel bags, you can get... I've done some dabbled with some apparel, and you can either get the single use bags or the double use bags where it's a bag, you fold it over, you pull the sticker off and it sticks down, you seal it. And then there's this perforated line where you rip it off. And then there's another sticker seal. So if you don't like it, you pull that one off, fold it a little farther, stick it down and send it right back. Uh-huh. In the same bag it came in. I just wonder if that would help people know, like, hey, you don't even have to call us if you don't like it. Just put the sticker back on it, put it right back in the box, put this label right over the last one and return it. But I got to imagine once they touch it and feel it and it's in their own house and they've already paid for it, they're not sending it back. I mean, 2% maybe, and you probably already have the 2% return rate anyway.
Yeah, there's not many people that want to return them. I mean, I've just kind of started this marketing campaign where I'm trying to market us as the toughest lightweight tripod on the market, which I don't know if you saw, but we posted a video, I guess it would have been this summer now, where we had a guy, we were at a show, we were at the Total Archery event in Utah, and we had a guy actually sitting on top of one of the tripods, and he's 220 pounds sitting right on top of the tripod like it's nothing.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, so that's what we're kind of marketing towards right now, trying to do is say, yeah. Hey, yeah, your tripod might be light, might be decent, but we're the toughest lightweight tripod on the market. This thing doesn't break, and hey, if it does break, just let us know. We'll fix it for you.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting strategy. I'd like, if you ever try it, let me know how it goes. I'd be very interested. Because I also have a Shopify store, so I know how easy it is to print a return label. It's like the next button down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I might have to give it a try, because I think that is a good idea. I don't think that it would... It definitely wouldn't hurt. Just
cost you 25 cents to print the label, and maybe you see like 0.5% increase in returns. But is 0.5% in returns worth it for 20% more checkouts?
Oh yeah, well, I definitely think that more people would purchase that, because I know like I would go, yeah, I can just send it back if I don't like it. Yeah, let's see what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah, you'd have to part. Like, are you on the fence? Like. Well, don't worry. You don't even have to call us. If you don't like it, we already put a return label in the box. No questions asked. You don't even have to ask us for the label. Just stick it on the sticker, put it right back in the mail.
Yeah.
And then people see that and they're like, oh, well, that's pretty simple. They click the link, they check them out, they find the one they want, they order it. They probably forgot by the time it shows up 2 days later that the return label is actually in the box. They're not planning on returning it. They just know in the back of their mind, if I don't like anything about it, I don't have, because you know how many people I feel like don't even like calling someone?
Oh, yeah.
They don't like talking. They don't like to talk to anyone. They don't want to call anyone. They, you know what I mean? It's like the whole movie theater. Like, they don't want to watch a movie with other people in the room. They just want to watch it from their home. Like, yeah. They don't want to set up a dentist appointment because they don't want to call the person to set it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. I definitely agree. I'll have to look into it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And see, because we're roughly $25 to $30
to ship. Yeah.
So I'd have to look into it, see kind of what it would cost us, what it'd be worth doing.
You'd have to be able to see, like, the way I feel like it would work the best is if you don't actually have to buy, you don't actually have to pay for shipping unless it comes back.
Yeah, well, we do free shipping anyways.
Right, but when you, so like on Shopify, and for anyone listening that wants to figure out like how this works, right, you can do a couple different things. You can do flat rate shipping, you can do free shipping, or you can do like full price shipping, right? So in my Shopify store, like we have it's a consumable. We had beard oil products. So it's a very low price point thing. So it's like we have a minimum before you get free shipping, right? We have to have like an AOV of like $25 to get free shipping. But my product's also small. So my shipping label, a lot of them are like 436 for like anywhere within Minnesota. I think it goes like 499 for the next state. The highest I think I've ever seen was like 576 to California. Right. So as soon as I click purchase a shipping label, it buys it, right? It spends $5.76 for postage, and then I print out the label and put it on the box, right? So I paid for shipping. Now, if I lose that order, if I, whatever happens, I already paid for shipping. I can go through and void it if I have to, but I already paid it. What I wouldn't want is if I did this whole return label strategy, I don't want to actually pay postage unless they return it. I just want to print the piece of paper that tells them, like, when they scan it, where it's headed, and then it charges me. And I'd have to make sure, like, that's the system that could work. But it would almost have to be, because if you returned it, like, you kind of don't know, you know, because I don't think return labels are specific on where they ship from. It's just to who they're going to. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, Yeah, I feel like it would have to be that way. And like Shopify would just have to be like, oh, someone scanned a return label, so now we're going to bill you the $20. But if it costs you $20 to put every single label in a box, then it might not be worth it.
Yeah, which that's why we have them call us if they want to return it. And then I can go on and get them a return label and send it to them. It's something I'd have to look into just to see, because it's not a bad idea. It's a really good idea, and I think that it would increase. I think that people would definitely want to buy more of that.
Yeah, you just have to make sure it's like – you'd have to make – maybe you just have to set up like a UPS charge account. And so like every month, the UPS just bills you for whatever someone put on your charge account, and maybe there's a way to figure that out. So that – because that way you're only actually getting billed for the return labels that are being used, not every single one you print off.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be the magic. I think that would be the – because no one's going to return it. Like,
yeah, no, we don't get returns.
No. I mean, like, hey, I don't know. I bought one, and then my wife bought me one for Christmas. I don't need to.
Yeah, that's about the only return we get. And usually at that, it's, can you give me the same deal my wife got, and we'll just give it to this person for Christmas? And it's like, yeah, you bet.
Sure. Yeah, that'd be interesting. So, what other things have you done that really seem to have moved the needle on revenue for the brand? Like, what marketing and growth strategies have you been like? Because everyone that starts a product company says, oh, I'm going to do it this way, and I'm going to do this. And affiliate marketing is how I'm going to grow. And then that doesn't work. And I'm like, okay, well, next I'm going to go to shows. And you know, then I'm going to try this, and I'm going to try that. And we all try a million things. And eventually something hits. And you're like, oh, that worked. And then you try it again, and it worked again. And then you learn some more, and then you learn how to scale it. And you've got your like main or favorite growth strategy. But it's different for every company. So I'm wondering, like, for you guys, what has been something for these like mid and high tier AOVs, average ordered value products, kind of works better in your experience?
So most of what we do for our advertising stuff is shows. I don't do any social media advertisements. Mm-hmm. Probably should, but I feel like I've got a decent enough following with Muley Maniacs and enough people that like it to share stuff when I post it that I don't need to do the social media marketing as much.
Yeah.
Most of what our marketing budget goes to is the shows, and I try to do between 10 and 15 a year.
Okay.
And so we're hitting a lot of shows, and we weed out the ones that we don't want to be at, and weed out the ones that are a little bit better, and decide which ones we're going to. And so I think this year we've got 8 right now. We're looking at 2 more.
And is that because then people get a chance to see them in person, touch them, and then they say, and do you do shows where people could buy at the show?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
We do shows really all over, well, mostly the Western U.S. We did go back to St. Louis this last year for ATA.
Okay.
But ATA is just not a show for tripods. So we're not going to be going back to it. It's also not a show to
make money at.
Yeah. Yeah. It's from what I've heard and people I've talked to, it's gone way downhill, and it definitely showed. We did have one order at ATA, but definitely not enough for us to go back.
Yeah, well, especially if you're not – ATA is an industry show. For people that don't know, it's Archery Trade Association. It's industry only. Consumers, the public, they're not invited. They can't get in. You have to be from a media company. You have to be from the product company working the booth, or you have to be like an industry representative, like a buyer, a retail buyer, a distribution outlet buyer. And before, people used to go to ATA in February or whatever it is. And these buyers for these big retailers and these big distribution groups, that's when they would put in their orders for the year. They'd see all the new products and they'd say, okay, we're going to do $50,000 worth of tripods. We're going to do this many of this model, this many of that model. You'd work out your deal. They'd buy it in February, ship it out in May, June, whenever, and you know, it'd hit the shelves for the year. Well, now that's changing. Brands are buying, like big retailers are constantly working on deals and buying product and swapping stuff out. They're not waiting until ATA to do it anymore because they can see what's out there so much easier with media, social media, websites, you know, and so you don't get that as much. The retailers aren't doing their big once a year buy, and there's no public to buy like one at a time. So maybe if you walk by and just somebody from a different company is like, oh, I really like your tripod. I want one.
Yep. Yeah. And I noticed it was a lot less buyers and a lot more of people like, oh, I'm a social media influencer and
I'm a podcaster.
I do this and I'm a podcaster and you should send me a tripod and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, I've got a good group of guys and girls that I work with right now.
Yeah.
I don't need to branch out. I don't need to send you a free product for you to do one review on. So I think it was kind of a bust. It was definitely fun. It was cool to go there and see stuff, and it's kind of turned into more of a show than what you want it to be. If you understand what I'm saying, I mean, like they had like Luke Bryan show up the one day and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, that's cool, but that's not why I'm here.
Yeah. I'm here to sell. I'm here to make money. And it could work. Like, so example, if I went to ATA, I'd still have to pay. Like, I have to pay to get in to be media. And then I would come over to your booth. And, you know, if we've got the time, we would do a short form video on each of the products. And then I'd post them so my followers could see what you got. What's new? How does it work? They could get their eyes on it. And that could be like their first touch point of a new product. And then they're like, hey, you know, I'm in the market. And then they go and look and they buy. And that's what I would do. I'd cycle through all the things that I thought were interesting and just be like, hey, show me what you got. And a lot of people do that at ATA. So I would not be unique. I mean, that's basically everyone that's not working a booth is there with a microphone. Hey, Stieg, what do you got? And you're like, well, I'm Stieg from Kennedy Tripods. And you know, here's our new tripod for 2025. And you probably did that spiel 100 times before you didn't sell anything.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, the best show that we've seen so far and the one that we put the most money into is the Western Hunting Conservation Expo in Salt Lake.
Yeah, and that's the show. I mean, that I know Sheep Foundation is a big one. SHOT Show is a big one, but that's also industry only. So Sheep Show is a different demographic, I think, whereas Western Hunt Expo is the everybody demographic. There's white collar, blue collar, outfitters, guides, DIY guys, you know, everything in between. And people go there in a way to spend money.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy how many people you'll talk to there. Or like that I would see there that, I'm here looking to buy a tripod. That's why I came to the show today, was to try and find a tripod to buy. And people from all over the country, all different walks of life. And I don't know, we've been doing it. This will be our 5th year there. So we've been doing it at this point long enough that we've made a lot of those relationships with people and those bigger companies and stuff that, it's one of our better shows. It's awesome. This last year, we were lucky enough to have enough people to actually work the booth that I didn't have to be there the whole time.
Yeah.
Which still didn't matter. If I was there, we had somebody from some company coming over to talk to me, and it was actually really good, and it was a lot of fun. and it seems to be our best selling show by far. But yeah, we also put a lot into it and try to make an awesome booth.
Yeah. I wonder, just give folks an example of what, like, you probably don't have, like, the smallest size booth. Because when you go to shows, I mean, there's, like, you pick a booth, and a lot of times it's a floor map. And the show is, if it's an existing show, you know, like, if the Western Rookie Podcast wanted to go to the Western Hunt Expo, I'd say, hey, can I get in? And they're like, sure, we have, you know, these different booths available. And they might say, you know, booth 610, it's on the upper level, aisle 7 at the end on the corner. And it's like, well, is that a good spot or not? I don't know. And, you know, or we got booth 13, which is a double booth on an end cap, or there's like a, you know, or booth 47, which is like, you know, 50 by 100. And it's like, well, no, I don't need that big of a booth. I mean, that would be like for, you know, Shields or Cabela's. What's like the bear booth? And like, what would be like, if someone wants to get into a show like that, like what would be like, you know, plan on spending at least this much for your floor space?
So I, most of the shows I do, we average, so we do a 10 by 20, yeah, which most your
that's a
baseline
double.
Bottom ones are a 10 by 10.
Yeah.
So we do a 10 by 20 in almost everyone just because it's hard to get, you know,
tripods,
7 or 8 tripods set up, yeah, in a 10 by 10.
Yeah.
So on most of our shows, we're looking right around $2,000 for our booth.
Yeah. And so then you get, and so then everyone's got to look at their product, their average order value, and their profit margin. And you probably have some type of a show special because you want people to actually buy now, not just think about it. And so, you know, you're probably going to offer some type of discount. And so then you kind of figure like, okay, I might have to sell, you know, if I'm an outfitter, I have to book one hunt and the show was worth it. Right.
Yep.
I book one $12,000 elk hunt on my 10 by 10 booth, and it's cost me $1,000 to be there, and my time, it was worth it. A 12 by 20 or 10 by 20, you know, it's like, okay, I have to sell X number of tripods. If it was beard oil, it's like, okay, I have to sell like 200,000 bottles of beard oil to make this worthwhile because they're $12 a piece, whatever the numbers are. Right. And so that's how people can think about it. And that's does it change a lot based on the show? Is one Western Hunt Expo more expensive because it's a bigger show, or do they stay pretty much in line because there's more booths as well, so they still make more revenue?
So there's actually a wait period for Western Hunt Expo. So when I first went, I was actually in the booth with Time's Up selling out of their booth because I couldn't get my own. They told me that there's about a 5-year wait period, 5-year list to get in. And wow. So I was thinking there was no way I was going to get a booth. And then I had a buddy, good friend of mine, that owned a business in the outdoor industry. And then he retired and decided he wanted to come back and do something else. And so he came back in, had us a booth at Western Hunt. And then last minute, week before the show, he calls me and goes, I'm not doing it. I gave up our booth. And it's like, well, great. I've got all this stuff ready to go.
Yeah,
you know, spent money on the displays, ready to do this, and now you're telling me we can't do it. So I actually just got extremely lucky, called up to Western Hunt, told them what happened, what was going on, just wanted any booth. I'd have been happy with anything. And they had one booth that was still open, and she goes, well, let me call you back in about 5 minutes. I got to call another company. If they don't answer, the booth's yours. So she called me back 5 minutes later and goes, well, they didn't answer. So if you want the booth and can pay for it right now, it's yours. So we paid for it as quick as we could. And it's one of those things that once you're in, you're in.
Yeah.
So
you get to first dibs on booking your booth again.
Yeah. Yeah. So I hopped right on it, got the booth, and wasn't prepared at all. We were just in a 10 by 10 and no real displays or anything like that. Couple pop-up banners, took some deer heads, and then just boxes of tripods stacked all over inside this booth with six of us in there trying to run it. And it's crazy. From the first time we were there, for some reason we tend to attract a crowd. And so we've got all these people crowded around our 10 by 10. And so this last year, we decided it was time to upgrade a little bit. So we upgraded to a 20 by 20. And that's about where things start getting pretty pricey. I think we pay $6,800 for our 20x20 at Western Hunt.
Yeah.
And it worked out. It's 10 times better than having the 10x10. You've actually got room. People can maneuver around inside it. I mean, you still get a big crowd gathered around the outside when it's full, but there's at least enough room that you feel like you can show somebody a tripod and not be out in the aisle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So that's kids. That gives people a reference point of like how much does a booth cost. And I'd say Western Hunt Expo is probably the top line. So if you get a smaller, like a regional or a state show, probably a little cheaper, you know, it just depends.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got two on my list this year that booths are right around $500 on for a 10x20, right around $500. And we did the one last year and it was surprisingly really, really good. I was pretty impressed with it. So we're going back again this year, give it another shot and see how it does. And the other one is one that we're trying for the first time and it's supposed to be good. It's in Idaho, which we've never done a show in Idaho. Well, we've done one archery event in Idaho. So we'll go give it a shot and see how it goes.
Yeah. I wonder, do you ever have an opportunity to trade advertising for your booth fees with Muley Maniacs and the size of your page?
Most of them know, because what they're trying to do at a show is a lot of it is they're not making the money. They're just trying to cover the cost of renting the area, paying for the drapes to divide the booths, stuff like that. And by the time it's all said and done, if they make it out of there with a couple $1,000, they feel like they've done pretty well.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Cause I've done that one time for a real small show. I was working for a brand and they were open, but it was a very small show, on trading some advertising of like pumping the show and promoting the show for the booth space. I would love to figure out how it would make sense for a podcast like our other show, The Western Rookie, to go to a show like the Western Hunt Expo, because that's a room full of our people. But I just don't know yet, like, what would I do?
Yeah. So are you familiar with The Draw? Do you know who they are?
I've heard of The Draw. Are they, they're more YouTube though, right?
So The Draw is a hunt consulting, hunt booking company.
Yeah.
And they go every year to the Hunt Expo. They don't get a booth. I don't know how they do it, but they just get a room that they can talk to a few people about consulting and stuff. And most of their show is spent going around to guys like me and hanging out at our booths and talking to people there and talking to me. And, hey, this is what we've got coming up. This is the hunts that are available. And it's a lot of advertisement that way, and a lot less having a booth and trying to book a show like that. And I think something like that for a podcast would be a really good thing. Or like the first year we were there, we were talking about Dan Matthews.
Yeah.
And we actually had Dan come out the first time that we were there, and he came and hung out with us in the booth and stuff, which was really good for him and really good for us because it got his name out there. And then there's a lot of people that knew who he was at the time still and would stop by just to see him.
Yeah. Yeah, that could work, especially because I probably have 30 contacts that go there from the Western show and the Two Buck show of people I've talked to that are there. So I could, you know, I would like to go as a consumer, just a flat out. And sometimes I go to shows like that. I don't even wear any podcast gear or anything, or say media or whatever. I just go to see stuff and I collect business cards and I follow up with people that were interesting on, you know, getting on the podcast. And I would love to go to the Western Hunt Expo for that reason alone. I think it'd be so much fun. Then if I wanted to take it the next step, I could probably say like, hey, I could start working with people like you and be like, hey, like I'm going to be there. Like, I'd love to stop by the booth, hang out, help out for, you know, an hour or two. And then, you know, maybe that would. It can be tricky to find the best cooler size for Western hunting. Antelope are small critters and you really don't need that much to keep them cold. So you don't want to be lugging around a giant cooler. Yet when you're going on an elk hunt, you could need 200 quarts or more to keep all that delicious wild game taken care of and cold until you get home. That's why I love my Arctic coolers, because they've got a size for everything. They also have options to add dividers or baskets to keep some of your things dry and all of your stuff organized, so it's easy to grab what you need out of your cooler. The best part is Arctic coolers have 100% the performance at a fraction of the price as all the competitors out there, which means you can finally get a cooler for each of your specific needs. We have a modular gear all over the place when it comes to Western hunting. Why not have modular coolers that are designed for the exact hunt you're going on? Whether you're bringing out a 110 or a 145 to elk camp, or you're just throwing the 72 quart in the back of the truck on your antelope hunt. Go to the show notes of this episode and scroll down. You're going to find all of our sponsor and discount section, and we've got a link in there to show you all of the amazing coolers Arctic has to offer, and you're going to see why I love the Arctic brand for all of my cooler needs. Would be the way to go, and it would help get my name out there, and hopefully somebody stops by and be like, hey, you're the Western Rookie guy. That would be great. I don't know if we're at that level or not.
I think you're there.
Yeah, that would be cool. But to do like a booth, it's like, what am I going to do? Podcast live from the show? First of all, I'm open to talking to anyone, but at least this way, like, I get to like see what people are about before we get them on the show. So that way, like, we've done pretty well. I think there's only been one person we had to screen and say no to. But who knows who could walk up and want to do 15 minutes on a podcast. Like, I wouldn't do full hour episodes, but then also like I spent $1,000 or $2,500 on a booth to talk to people that I could have got anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you aren't going to be able to stop by for a podcast, you know, Shed Crazy's not going to be able to stop by for a podcast. You guys are busy. Like, it's going to be other consumers, just random people, which I'm all open to talking to. It's just like, I have less to go on doing it that way than I would if I just found them on Instagram and be like, hey, you look like a really interesting dude. Let's do a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I think going not with a booth for podcasts would be even better, especially for this, for the $2 podcast, because everybody's there.
Yeah.
Everybody is at Western Hunt. So you go there and go, hey, you know, I really want to go meet this guy and see if he'd be interested in doing a podcast with me.
Yeah.
You just stop by the booth. He's going to be there.
Yeah. I would do that for sure. And I do that a lot, especially for local shows here in Minnesota. And it would be a fun time. I've never been to Salt Lake City. I've never even been to the state of Utah. So it'd be a fun time to get out there. I would probably go to the Western Hunt Expo based on the Western podcast, not the, I'd keep that in mind and I'd collect business cards for the entrepreneurship, but I'd be there as Western Rookie, and I'd probably like go get a Western Rookie sweatshirt made or shirts, and not to sell, just to wear so people actually know.
Yeah. Yeah. Which it would be great for that too, because all of these big name social media influencers, they're all there. They've all got booths and are selling their hats and shirts out of it and stuff. And that's where you meet half of them. That's where I meet a lot of the people that run the tripods for me and stuff like that, and guys that produce content and stuff like that for me.
Yeah, it would be fun. I got to do it, especially if we do what we talked about earlier with some rebranding stuff. I think it would be a perfect opportunity to hit the ground running.
Oh yeah,
get out there.
Yeah, I think that you could get some big names on it right away doing something like that.
Well, and I could get the same names I've already had. I mean, we've had a couple big names on it already. I mean, I would say probably Aaron Snyder is probably the biggest known name that we've had so far. But we've had a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that you need to rebrand and go for it. I think that you could hit the ground running good with it.
Yeah. I would also probably want to try to do like a pod tour, because I've talked to a lot of podcasters, because podcasting is a good demographic for the $2 show, and then be like, hey, I'm doing this thing. I'd love to do a tour, and, you know, maybe we could do a pod swap, but I'm trying to get the name out of my new show. And yeah, hopefully people like me enough that they're like, yeah, I'd love to help out. And hopefully I'm a good enough person that people would find that of value, and that I've hopefully provided some value to them already, or else could provide them more value in the future as well to make it worth their while. But yeah, I think so. I think that's kind of the direction I'm leaning towards, and just got to figure out a couple things like, not necessarily what, but how, like, what, you know what I mean? Like, what's the plan? What's the strategy? You know, what's the brand? What's the mission? couple of those early things.
Yeah, just wing it. Just go for
just it. Wing it. Just wing that, it. That's pretty much how I do everything. That's pretty much how I do everything. I winged it on every test I ever took in college. I always wing it on every job interview I've ever gotten. It's like, if I don't know it by now, I'm not going to learn it overnight.
Yeah, that's all I did here. Just wing it. And
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah,
just wing it. And then you got a business going and trying to figure out what to do just along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be fun. That would be fun. Yeah, no, I think Western. Do you have the dates for that show? I'm getting excited about it. It's coming up.
I want to say it's February 14th to the 18th or something like that. It's right around there.
The person probably forgot about it, but there's another thing going on that weekend in St. Louis or Springfield, Missouri, that I was maybe going to work on, like being at and emceeing, which would also be a good opportunity. But have you ever heard of Quest Hunt Co?
I haven't.
Oh, it's a whitetail hunting, like nationwide, state by state, but nationwide hunting contest. So it's like a two-person thing. You and a buddy sign up from your state. So you could say like Kansas. And whoever shoots the biggest two deer wins. And it's like big prizes. Like, I can't remember, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 worth of prizes if you get first place in your state. And so it's like, you know, like Kansas one year, it took like over 400 inches to win.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. And so like they, I thought it would be fun to go and then like have like short, quick hitters, like bonus episode content, talking to these teams of like, okay, walk me through the first buck. And then, okay, you shot a 180, like, what was the pressure like to like find the other side or to, you know, because if both people don't shoot, it's almost impossible to win.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I thought that could be cool. Just kind of, and it's like a 3-day event because they have to score everyone. They do lie detector tests on everyone to be like, did you bait? Did you break any laws? You know what I mean? And so I thought it'd be cool. So all the people that are like in the running are there all weekend anyway, just sitting around.
Yeah.
So that could be a cool thing to do. So I'll have to actually follow up with him. His name's Brian as well. But that was the same weekend. That's what I was like, shoot. And yeah, it's Valentine's Day like weekend, which is fun. Like not the best time in the world to be gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you do come out to Western Hunt, let me know because we'd have you in the booth. You'd come hang out. So this year we're doing things a little different. So we've still got our 10 by 20, but I'm really good friends with another company that's going to be there. That's Baby Booners. And they do those mini replicas. Have you seen those?
I've had, not Baby Boomers, but I've had, mini mules. I've had Antler Tech on the pod. That'd be a great one to get on the pod.
Yeah, they would be really good. But yeah, they're actually, so they were in the booth with us last year and then they were able to get the 10 by 20 right behind us this year. So we're actually just going to take down the curtain and have a big 20 by 30 and mix everything in together. And they're bringing a bunch of big heads. And I had a buddy that's got a really big bowl that I'm trying to get him to bring his bowl. And we're just going to try and make it a cool, really cool booth.
How big is big for the Western Hunt Expo? Because I know there's going to be some 400 inch bowls in the room.
This one that I'm trying to get, so he's a 7x8. But his extra points are, I mean, I think his longest extra point's like 6 inches.
Oh,
so it's not very long extra points.
Yeah.
But so he's a straight six with two flyers off the one side and one off the other side. And he goes 438.
Yeah. That's giant. Jesus.
Yeah. He's big enough that if you're just looking at him, just first glance, you're like, oh yeah, that's a good bull. And then you really start looking and you're like, man, that second's like 30 inches long. That third's like 30. Fourths are like 25. You know, you start doing the math. Seconds,
like 30 inch fronts?
Yeah, I think they were, yeah, he was, what did they tell me? 27 on his G2s.
Oh my God.
His shortest point is his one G1 is 17.
I saw a bull kind of like that, not near as big, but he's probably a 390 to 400 inch 7x8. I have phone scope video of him, which, by the way, I don't recommend PhoneScope to anyone. There's a lot better brands out there, but it was a PhoneScope video. And every single time was like 15 to 25. Even the sixth, seventh, and the eighth is just a monster bull. Public land, North Dakota bull. That sucker was huge. I tried to get on him for the next 12 days. Never saw him again. Saw him twice that day. Saw him in the morning, saw him in the evening. Never saw him again. They had bow hunter and mule deer. Bow hunters got in that valley a week before I could hunt, and I think they probably pushed him out. And then he got shot on private land about 6 miles away. Ironically, the same direction I moved to shoot the bull I shot. But that sucker, when you said 7x8, it just instantly made me think of him.
Yeah.
It, on his back, it was like 15 or 20 inch fourth. And I never, they say he went 360. There's no possible way. I'd show you a video of him and you're like, there's no way that's a 360 bull. So maybe they were talking net scoring.
They could have. I don't know. With elk, I've learned. I mean, it's so hard. I don't even try to judge a bull anymore.
Well, and so I don't either. I had Ryan Carter score him. Okay. And Ryan Carter said high 380s to high 390s, but he gets bigger every time I look at him.
Yeah.
And yeah. If there's anyone that knows 400-inch elk, he's one of them.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I just don't even mess with it because what I figured is if you're an inch off per time on your guess, well, that you're 12 inches off there. So you could be saying, oh, that bull's 380 and he's actually high 360s.
Well, let me see. Let me show you the video. Well, here's the one I did shoot, by the way. I'll start with that.
Okay, yeah, that's a solid bull.
Yeah, he's a little, the screen's a little too bright, but yeah.
Yeah.
He's 354, is a clean straight six, nothing, and he's only 34 inches wide.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a cool bull.
One beam was 58, the other one was 53 or 54. No, holy 56 or 53. Yeah, long, long beams, but not just not terribly wide. But I have a video of this, the monster. It's kind of,
yeah, that's a big bull. Kind of hard to.
And then when he, like, you can see his sixth, seventh, and eighths back there are like all the same length as his fourth.
And he's just narrow. Is that a genetic over there? Just narrow bulls?
I do think it is. I think North Dakota has some narrower bulls. Like, I would say, like, Colorado, like, some parts of Colorado, Utah get those huge, wide 45-inch bulls. I don't see any of those in North Dakota.
Huh.
I can't hunt anymore either, so it doesn't, I don't really look for them like I used to. But, yeah, I shot a 30, no, he was, yeah, he was 34 inches wide. I shot a Colorado, a 6x7 in Colorado that was only like 36 inches wide. He was only like probably a 4 or 5 year old bull. Wasn't a big 6x7, like a 280 inch 6x7. So I'm still looking for that. I want that big old,
that big wide swoop.
Yeah, that would be so cool. And I want him to, I like when they go wide early and then straight up. Like, it's like some bulls just kind of get that wide, but the ones that are like,
yeah, my favorite look is when they get those thirds that lay out flat.
Oh, they go straight out.
Yeah, and then curl up big on the ends.
You'd like this bull right here. He's not huge, but he's got 20-inch thirds.
That's the thing.
That swoop way out and curl up.
But that's the thing over here is we've just got little thirds on our bulls over here.
What remember that bull that was in Rocky Mountain National Park for a while? And he had those 30-inch front or thirds. This bull that I shot in Colorado is like that, but not nearly as big. But his thirds are his longest tine, and they go out and curl up really wide.
Yeah,
I think I have a small. I think I have a picture of him too. He doesn't have very long beams either. I do really bad about actually posting the things that I shoot. It's one of my fatal flaws.
Oh, me too. But all my friends out here, you know, like this guy that's got that bull I was talking about.
Yeah.
He's got a buck that's in the 230s that he killed a few years ago. And it's like, I don't have anything close to that. So there's no point in me bragging.
Right. Yeah. There's some people that shoot some monster. The It's too bright. Oh, yeah. You can see that one third that goes like he's way out there.
Oh yeah. That's the thirds that I like on bulls. And it's hard to find out here.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, that'd be cool. So man, like we already ate up an hour of talking together.
Yeah.
And you can tell we kind of digressed from the entrepreneurship stuff into Big Elk, which I knew would happen with you and I. But
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's why we do this, because we like to hunt.
We like to talk to people that like to hunt.
That's for sure too.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, well, before we break, give folks where they can find both Muley Maniacs, where they can follow along with your adventures, where they can see the tripods, and we'll put the links to those things in the show notes for anyone that wants to go check them out.
Yeah, so we're just Muley Maniacs on Instagram and Canopy Tripods. And then our main website is MuleyManiacs.com, and everything's on MuleyManiacs.com.
Awesome. Well, we will put the links to all those places in the show notes below, but thanks for being here, Steve. Thanks for sharing about Muley Maniacs, about tripods, Western Hunt Expo, doing trade shows, all of those great things for our listeners. I really appreciate it. And thank you for being here.
Saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel, because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as 3 suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.